Okay.
Call to order, regular meeting, special public hearing, North Bend Planning Commission, Thursday, October 24th. First item on the agenda, actually, we're going to the first item, make sure. We've got two council members with us tonight. Why? Because you may not know some of the planning commissioners.
No problem.
Would like to say who you are.
Jonathan Rosen.
And Alan Gotthelf.
And despite the fact that we know each other, we also have with us tonight Frank Page from Public Works. Don, I assume you're joining us formally as well, even though you've got a swallow. So thanks for everybody being here. All right, first item on the agenda, minutes from the September 26th, 23rd Planning Commission meeting. Can I have a motion? Second. Questions, comments, corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Next item on the agenda, public comment on non-agenda items. Mr. Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Travis Bridgman, 713 Ogle Avenue, Northeast, North Bend. This is actually a special idea. This is a lovely one, since I see this as a special public hearing. We all know there's so much topic about the baseball fields coming in, with the Little League and the city joining efforts. And for a patriotic reason, and it'd be a fun discussion, if we install a PA system, then the kids can go up before the baseball games and sing the national anthem. And it's kind of a pretty emotional time, you know, and it seems like it could really be good for our morale. And then also other uses, you know, if somebody's kind of wandered too far and you need to make public announcements or you know, it's a pretty creative idea. It opened up a lot of possibility if we had a nice PA system there.
And you're talking specifically about the proposed new ball fields at Tollgate?
Thorgerson, right?
There are some other organizations.
Yeah, honestly, I think it would be a great idea at every park to have a PA system. But particularly, first, with the Little League Association and, okay, and friends who are talking about it and just rant, kind of favorable ranting about cool stuff that could happen if there's a PA system. It would be really a good system of security and I think it'd go over really well.
Thank you.
And I'd love to hear the national anthem, you know.
Thank you. So no other not public, soon no more non-agenda items. Public hearing, amendments to the Parks Capital Facilities Plan and the Parks Element of the Comprehensive Plan. Recall we had introduction at our last meeting. Was it only the last meeting?
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was two meetings ago.
Two meetings.
Well, no, it was the last meeting because the meeting between was canceled.
All right. So, remind me again, you want me to open the public hearing or do you need to make presentation first?
I can give you guys just a very brief intro. These are amendments that we need to do to get some projects onto the Parks Capital Facilities Plan so they're eligible for park impact fee revenue. So that's the improvements over at Torgerson Park to do the restroom and the backstop improvements. Also, Civic Plaza downtown, the pedestrian bridge over at E.J. Roberts Park, and then improvements to William H. Taylor Park, associated with the depot and the plaza entry, and then also adding the Dahlgren Family Park, which is the one next to King County Tanner Landing Park, so that we can have that on the CIP when it comes time to build, so we're ready to use parking back here every four.
Great. With that introduction, we'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody here from the public wishing to speak on this matter? Seeing and hearing no one, we'll close the public hearing. All right. Next item on the agenda, deliberation and possible recommendation on the same Parks Capital Facilities Plan. So, Mike, I think you've already given the overview. Questions, comments, members, council officials. One question I had was there was a little bit of discussion around the bridge of E.J. Roberts as far as, since it's already exists, is that something that can be a capital? Did that get satisfied by staff that it, yes, indeed, can? Obviously, it's still on here.
Yeah, it was discussed at management. I think that the consensus back is it's a new bridge, even if it's replacing an old bridge, it's still an improvement to a park. It can be, we could use parking impact fee revenue for it.
The old bridge is in such disrepair, it can't be repaired.
Yeah.
So we're proposing a completely new bridge. So we took this to legal counsel. We are going to have a couple structural, get a structural engineer to go on the record and say it's not repairable, it's not fixable. Therefore, it needs to be replaced with a new structure.
Do it. Okay. Entertain a motion then.
Go ahead. All you men. So make a motion that we approve the amendments to the Parks Capital Facilities Plan in the Parks element of the comprehensive plan.
Motion and second. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Great. Introduction. Amendments to North Bend Municipal Code 1905 regarding low-impact street standards.
I think I'm gonna take this one. All right, so basically, since 2009, when we lifted the moratorium, prior to that, we had been working to get our code in line to realize development and prepare for development. And since the lift of the moratorium, we have since now not only seen that development, we've processed the neighborhoods that enabled Cedar Falls and Tanner Woods. So some of the developments that we've actually been able to implement our standards now. And so since those neighborhoods have been constructed, there has been a concern that the streets are too narrow. Specifically, the missing link is the second parking strip. Right now, the street standard that we have for Cedar Falls, for example, is parking on one side. So 2 9-foot lanes in a 7.5 parking lane. There's been a concern that we really need that second parking lane, so an extra 7.5. I think Councilmember Rosen and Godolph are here because they sit on the CED Council Committee, and both of these two were instrumental in helping work through a lot of the street standards in the past. And one thing that was a really unique approach that we took in the past was we created a street standard that allowed a low impact standard and also a standard that would be able to be utilized if a developer wanted to do a typical pipe and pond system. So now that we have seen the development, we've seen the roads get built in both scenarios, Tanner Woods, the pipe and pond, parking on both sides, Cedar Falls is parking on one side. There was a desire to bring this back for evaluation and Planning Commission input. So that is what we're here today for. And Frank, did you have anything you would like to add? City engineering has been evaluating this too, and so we kind of have different. We have council here to give their thoughts and engineering. But Frank, if you'd like go ahead.
Answer any questions you may have. Did you provide them with our?
No, right now all they received was what the council committee had asked them
to
review.
To
sure,
one?
Go ahead.
Well, that looks like a thick pack.
It's a weapon.
At this point, we're just going to send it straight back to the CED committee to say what?
We'll invite you to that meeting, so you're going to have to read that packet.
That's the one thing I don't miss about this.
Well, and just remember, this is an intro, so obviously handing information out tonight is more of, you're going to take this back and...
You want to share your safe paper?
So, Janet, I'm sorry I'm not that
familiar. Wait, this picture's better.
How it gets improved, but Cedar Falls, for instance, Cedar Falls is noticeably narrower.
I think from now on we...
Is there a reason, or how does that come about? That's what I'm kind of missing.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
How did the narrower streets come about in Cedar Falls?
So Cedar Falls is what we call our low-impact development standard. And the when we developed the two standards, the Pipe and Pond, which has the two, you know, the typical street standard with the parking on both sides, we decided the low impact. There was quite a bit of, I guess, discussion around, well, if we're going to do low impact, one of the main premise of low impact is to reduce the impervious surface. So what we when you drive the neighborhood, you'll see there's bulb outs that are located kind of sporadically, and those were placed strategically to help guide parking on, so you could have parking on both sides, but really only on one side at any given time, so you couldn't do the bob and weave like in Seattle. So the bulb outs kind of were helping guide where you could park and where you couldn't park, but allowing parking on both sides. There's a concern that that isn't working and it's actually too narrow. So the council committee's request to staff was to basically keep that same standard but add a 7.5-foot parking lane and keep the LID, everything else the same, just add the extra parking. And keep the bulb outs at the corners, but remove the bulb outs in the middle of the street because obviously those would no longer be necessary.
What wasn't working on the original flow that was observed?
I believe it's the narrowness, the kind of the, I call it elbow room. You know, when you're driving, it just feels tight.
And was it the cutouts for the parking maybe were not wide enough for vehicles?
Because
I would see another benefit is reducing speed.
No, I think the general context has been just the lack of parking on both sides of the street. Frank and Don have a preference to have 8-foot parking lanes. And again, that was part of the premise of, you know, just trying to meet the balance. When we were developing the standards for the Pipe and Pond, the traditional street, I'm going to call it the traditional street.
Sure.
We did specifically go to the 7.5 to pick up an extra foot to keep, that was part of the kind of working through the developers' concerns of just continuing to lose sellable lot space,
right.
You know. So that's where that 7.5 came from.
Was there a considerable community complaints to it, or how were the observations brought forth, I guess?
Sure.
I've heard from, I would say, just about everybody I've asked, or people have come up to me complaining. They say it just feels so tight in there. Some of it is the reality of, you know, it's construction now. We're getting smaller and smaller lots, and we're getting higher and higher density than what we used to be building here, obviously, and that's just part of King County in this stage of MGA. But a lot of it seems to be the impression that that street is so narrow. Part of it is there's a lot of construction, but the one parking lane seems to be, I think, what's contributing most to it. And that's what we're here to talk about.
Sure.
But I haven't had a single person come up to me and say, I love that. But I have had numerous people say, God, you know, it seems so tight.
I can see with even with kids getting in and out of cars, and if there's certain times of day where it's a little bit more traffic, having that narrow corridor could be a little bit more risky.
Yeah, and I think some of the bulb outs, you know, you mentioned slowing traffic. You know, putting bulb outs maybe at crosswalks is a great way to slow traffic so it doesn't go flying through there.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of bulb outs now just throughout the Cedar Falls.
Mm-hmm.
Using the bulb outs to delineate, if I'm correct, parking on this side of the street, and then it switches to parking on that side of the street, and we use the bulb outs to kind of bounce them back and forth. And I think that also adds to that feeling of real tight congestion in there.
There's got to be a compromise. I mean, one of the things we went over and what causes is we went to Tanner Woods and got a tour of Tanner Woods when they were showing the vault that they had put in, and there was nobody there, and he showed us the streets, and, well, you could probably land an airplane down. And Jonathan and I kept looking at it, and going, yeah, it is kind of big. And that's when we went back and said, let's take a look at reducing it. And this is one of those ones where you go too far from our standpoint. We took a look at it. I mean, if you go take a look at Tanawood and then go drive through Cedar, you'll see a huge difference. And it's not an appealing difference. You know, especially because the reality of it is most people, when there's a party, are going to park on both sides of the street. Even though we say there's only one side parking, it's going to hamper that. And what I'm worried is something's going to happen where we're not going to be able to get emergency vehicles down there either.
If you're looking for anyone to blame, you can blame the two of us for bringing this back.
We're admitting we made a mistake.
And one thing to think about on the Tanawood that makes a difference to me is the street design, because they did pipe and pond, enables a 4-foot planter, which is really, so when you look at the space allocated to a vehicle, it's pretty grand compared to the pedestrian space, which is the 4-foot planter and the 5-foot. So with the proposal that kind of came from CED to add the 7.5 parking lanes but keep everything else the same, you still get the biochannels in the planter strips, which really actually, like the Cedar Falls biochannels are 13 feet on one side, and then the other side is 5 feet because it's not a biochannel, it's actually just a planter strip. So that is one thing that would be different and would be a helpful element to reducing the overall look of the extra pavement.
Can you help clarify, is the pipe and pond a bioretention kind of system? Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. It's the system where it goes into a catch basin and then it's piped to a treatment center versus...
Pond and then
but it's not bioretention, it's just
it can,
detention.
It can
it's both,
detention.
Yeah.
It goes
out
in the detention, but it's a different type of...
Are there other examples you know of or around us where there's a bioretention pond versus
Bartels parking lot? Isn't that retention underneath?
Bartels is retention and treatment underneath.
But not bio.
It's not bio. The storm scepter system is essentially exactly like a septic system.
What is Sideview considered? New Sideview.
Pipe and pond.
Because we don't have a pond. We have these huge rivers or whatever you want to call it.
You've got channels and online detention, make retention.
And actually, Wood River is open channels, so it's conveyed via open channels, and then to an overflow pond. But
and Tanner is which?
Wood River.
Oh, no, but so Tanner was...
Tanner is pipe and pond.
Right.
Yeah, that was some vault. It's beautiful.
Pond, when I say pond, it's a vault, yeah.
Yeah.
With
so,
the
so
wood...
The difference is a surface pond.
Wormits?
It's a vault underground. Yeah. It's still the same thing. You're just retaining the water.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Underground, you allow usable space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool solution, but from what John Day said, it was very expensive.
It's a very expensive solution. Frank, I was going to ask if you could just even give us just a really brief overview of just at the parcel level the impact of LID versus traditional pipe and pond. And I'm thinking in terms of what's in it for the developer in particular. You know, are they really saving land? Are they giving land? Is it just helping with on-site treatment? What's the storm?
With the traditional pipe and pond, they essentially give up one or two lots for the detention pond. The other option is to do regional type detention where you go and take, and you can, I've seen, I've done athletic fields in a detention pond where you put the athletic field in the bottom of the pond. A major storm comes, it fills up. After the storm goes, it drains and goes away. And those are more regional type areas. That's a predominantly what Denver does. The whole Denver metro area urban drainage control district has these huge detention ponds that are actually their athletic fields. They fill up at work, and everybody in the whole county, the whole Denver metro area pays into that program, and it's done like King County Flood Control District. The benefit to the bioswales is they're more localized, smaller. They're right next, right in front of your house. If you like that feature in front of your house, some of the ones I think that I've seen predominantly in this area are larger detention ponds that have been fenced around and turned into mosquito ponds, and not very sightly, not very good looking. So I think the thought is the LIDs are more appropriate, and I don't think we know how they're going to last. And I think it's one of our concerns, how are they going to work in the long term? They haven't been out there long enough to know how often are they going to have to be replaced, removed, you know, what's the mechanism if they don't work. One of the problems we had with Polygon is they didn't protect those during construction, and they had all the construction silt, and we really tightened up controls on that for both side view and along the grove. Some of these newer ones were really, and I think that's one of the predominant performance problems we had last year. We were out there, like, we were washing off the mud from the trucks into the street, and they washed off down the gutter into the bioswales, and that's what plugged them all up. So they had to go back and completely pull them out, redo them, and put them back in. But the long term, we don't know how long those are going to last. Eventually, if they're not properly taken care of, maybe the silt's going all the way down into the gravels, they may not last too long. Some of the other things that we look at, I got this week from ITE, is that design is not what it looks like. It feels like design is how it works, and that came from Steve Jobs. But I think that's really appropriate here. We've got all the theory and everything on pipe and pond or bioswales and infiltration channels. But one thing that we're starting to see is, you know, once it goes out of the planning commission, out of, you know, preliminary plat and final plat starts getting used, then we start getting the phone calls. And I've had phone calls, parking issues out there, drainage issues. You look at all the EFER fire equipment, you'll notice on both sides of almost all of them, there's mirror marks because they can't get through and they tear mirrors off. We see a lot of them. I asked, but we haven't gotten the information. We're trying to see how many accidents we have with doors and mirrors on some of these conditions. Polygon, we've had a lot of people call and complain about parking. We've only had one person come in and complain that people are driving too fast through there. And I'm trying to figure out how in the world you can drive too fast.
That's pretty bold.
Just people not paying attention to the bulbs, and the ones out there are real tight radiuses. I've actually seen them jump the bulbs and end up in the bioswale. So we've got a lot of those kind of things. The other thing we've got that's really unique in a lot of ways to North Bend is the diverse population we've got. We've got a lot of people that drive pickups, and we've got a lot of people that drive Priuses. Well, you can park a Prius where you park a pickup. You can't necessarily park a pickup where you put the Prius, and I think we're trying to balance that out. The other thing that we're looking at is we're looking long-term maintenance on these, because these piles, you know, the ones we've built so far have a straight grade crown. They don't have a crown. It's a straight grade from one curb and gutter to the other. If we want to maintain that or overlay that in the future, anything we do, we're going to have to mill that whole road, which is going to increase our cost. On a standard crown, we can mill at the edges and then bring it up and just do an overlay. So those things are going to impact us as we get on the road, if and when we have enough money to
overlay
residential streets.
The reason you have to mill across the whole section is to keep the final pavement even with the curb.
Correct. Because right? If we did a 2-inch overlay on one of these new bioswales,
yeah,
we'd build it up two inches on both sides. It would work on the downstream side, but on the upstream side, we'd have 2 inches of water.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Now, that would be solved if biochannels were on both sides of the road, though, right?
You could do it that way, too. The biggest concern we've got is I'm not in favor of 9-foot lanes. I think that works if we don't have a lot of traffic. But the bigger issue is the 7.5-foot parking width. Most vehicles are a minimum of 7s. The smaller vehicles are 7.5. You get the larger vehicles, and they're 8, 8.5 on those bigger ones, especially with the dillies. But then you've also got to factor in people's driving habits, and there's not too many people that park right up against the curb. In fact, I try to get my daughter, my wife, not to park up against the curb so I don't wear the sidewalls and rip the rims off. but you can see a lot of variation in that. So.
And then you add in a twisty, windy road, and confuses people.
Yeah, so what do you think the average parking distance is from the curb? 12 to 18 inches? At last?
In that area. The pictures I've shown there over on Downing, going into North Bend Middle School, they were parking. That wasn't a parking area, but the parents over there waiting
sure.
for the kids.
It's gone.
So Frank, in that photo, is that your dually there in photo two?
No, I'm not allowed to have a dually.
Or pull anything.
Yeah.
And we didn't take these pictures trying to pick out any one thing that works or doesn't work. We're just trying to show what happens. You know, the one on the front with Eastside Fire is, I believe, up in Issaquah Plateau, where they've actually had places where they can't get the fire ambulance and aid cars through. So, yeah, we'll go to that extreme. And we got a little bit of that this summer at the farmer's market, where they have people parking. You've been over there. People were parking all over the place. There was one afternoon that if we would have had an aid car, I don't think they could have got in. And that's what we're trying to avoid, is to look at the long term.
Do you know what the paved width on this first photo is?
That I do not know for sure.
What's the paved width on Downing?
Downing is an 8-foot parking lane. It's 8 foot from the curb to the white mark where the dillies stick out at,
yeah.
And then two 11-foot lanes.
Well, that was only supposed to be parking on one side.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing there is people parking illegally on photo three.
Mm-hmm. Correct. The other thing that we kind
of parked in line.
I think they're in line, actually.
They're not violating, they're not parking.
But they don't.
It's going in. It wouldn't be going out. The right side is going in. That might be a line.
That's one of the other problems with not having parking on both sides is the enforcement issue.
Right. And seeing those curbs for the cars in photo three, they're facing us. Those curbs aren't painted, so it's assumed parking. And so the folks on the right, because I get stuck in this twice a day, are
yeah.
going into school,
yeah.
and then I have a Yukon, so I'm this truck.
Mm-hmm. You're the guy.
That way for a car coming with the same size
right. rig.
Well, the best is add the bus into the mix, and then it gets really
and they turn tight.
Yes, they do.
Stop sign. I was shocked by this one of those driving schools.
But
I
thought enforcement's a big issue, and it's whether it's Polygon or.
But see, this Rock Creek,
they have a major problem with parking in there, and the sheriff is out there trying to get, and Eford's out there trying to get, so that if something does happen, they can get through.
So,
just to kind of also keep in mind the street standard we're talking about, we aren't talking about necessarily where we have a school, which is typically on
this
Collector.
Exactly where I was going. This
yeah.
is my traffic area.
Yeah, we're talking about, just so you guys stay, it is the local access residential neighborhood street. So, in theory, if there was a new school that went into a neighborhood, it would be on a different street section because you need that Collector.
Well, if it did, then the street would have to be upgraded.
Right, right.
But we've also got a street coming in at Garner Creek where the street is varying between 12 and 24 feet. And we're going to have, I've already made the statement that they're going to go to that standard, but we can't plow snow, so we want to put the maintenance and the control, the parking and everything on the homeowners association, because we're not going to be able to get snow plow through there.
Well, I think, this is, from my perspective, a really complicated question. There's a lot of moving parts here, and so I think it's going to be challenging for us to, you know, try and wade through all the pieces. And so, just in the simplicity, so like in what you're sharing, Frank, here, it's both. I'm hearing more about lane width, parking width, than about an actual second parking lane. Although I'm sure you support that as well, but you're saying that it's not just about adding another lane for parking, it's what's the width of that, right? So from from your department's perspective, even with what's been presented today, you're looking for another 3 feet foot more on each driving lane and a half foot on each parking lane.
Right? Typical driving lanes are ranging between 10 and 12 feet. You want to the 9 foot.
10 to 12 in a residential street section?
Some of the newer guidelines are going a little bit smaller because cars are getting smaller.
What's typical interstate?
Interstate or 12-foot lanes?
12-foot lane. And so a 12-foot lane in a residential area equal to an interstate lane, that seems...
Well, if you think about it, you got a standard pickup, a standard car, mirror-to-mirror, is pretty average, eight feet. That's 2 foot on this side and 2 foot on that side. You start encroaching on that 2 foot, and people start getting nervous about what they're doing.
Especially
with younger drivers and older drivers.
Well, when I look down your list of vehicle widths, I mean, I'm seeing 10 feet, so it's not that I don't hear you. I guess an ERF brush truck, is that kind of a standard?
Yeah, the fire's clear. I mean, they like the 20-foot clear. They have obviously approved all over the board in East Side jurisdiction, East Side fire jurisdiction, 18 feet. So
18 paved?
Yeah, clear. Okay. Yeah, 9. So... but their dream or their desire is the 20.
SeaTac Airport.
Yeah. And then Mike actually put a nice chart together which shows all your current streets and their width.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, which was another piece of it. Is just one of the other things that just on the right-of-way section alone is the difference between right-of-way and the pavement piece of the road. That's a different element in itself, and so yeah, Mike, it is a great chart. I think it's very informative. I don't know that it, know what conclusion I can draw from it, but
it's not highly accurate. I did this based on Rob's request, but what I did is I just looked at IMAP, King County GIS system, and I did measurements. Just looking at the aerial photos from curb to curb to try to get those. So that
yeah, if you could just clarify that it wasn't just from numbers I fed you. I didn't.
No.
Are you not trustworthy? Come on.
I think Mike's big point is he didn't go to the plat maps to get, he did it quickly on IMAP.
You know, one of the things that I see on here, and we get asked this question all the time, whether it's on a project or the public, is, you know, we go out and somebody says, where's my property line?
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't a good answer, you know, off the cuff answer. You know, if you're out on county roads, they can be, you know, pretty standard, 60 feet. But in the city, you've got to go find the plat to really figure out what the right of way is, and then you start trying to tell people where their property line is.
Right.
And then you got the utility easement, you know, and as you shrink these rights way up, and they start trying to push all these utilities closer and closer.
And how often the right-of-way line is not where they think it is, right? You're not going from
99.9%.
They didn't pave the road actually down the center of the right-of-way, right? It's shifted. I'm going to shut up.
No, I was just going to say two things. One, thank you for recommending this and then sending out the recommendation to go out and check stuff out because it really puts it all into a better perspective. And as I'm going through this, to your other point, Rob, was there's a lot of different elements that are playing into this, and what I'm trying to do just mentally is prioritize each of those things. So when I think of fire and emergencies, that to me is like priority number one, right? So if I were to force rank everything into, okay, we've got fire and emergencies, then we've got public right-of-way, we've got safety, other safety hazards, then we've got stormwater, all these other things, I'm just wondering if there's a way if we try to tackle this to organize it in that way. To see if we can really start getting down to what's most important and try to answer that and satisfy that need first. But because right now, I mean, to your point, I mean, there's so many elements that are playing into this.
And I understand where you are. I guess the fire and safety, as we kind of teasingly say, of course, I mean, we know that fire and safety, always the wider the better.
Right.
I look at what's been approved. correct me if I'm wrong, but it's been through fire and safety review, and they may have been unhappy, but they at least grudgingly said yes to it, right? Or we wouldn't have that with being built, I'm assuming. So,
and I recognize that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the earlier points that was made was Cedar Falls, people not parking close enough.
Right.
So emergency, even though it's been greenlit, they can't drive down.
Has an emergency vehicle had an issue yet in that track?
I don't think so. I haven't heard of any.
Hasn't really built both sides yet. It's just starting to get.
Well, Wayne, we don't have a lot of homes occupied, so.
We've had them out there a couple of times during the construction during the day, but we've actually had to call the sheriff to say, we need some help out here because the parking where they couldn't get through if they had to. And we have had those calls.
I think that brings up one of the other things that from the step back standpoint, that concerns me is that we're not dealing with something in a built environment yet. I mean, it's this particular plat which is raising the concern is very much a plat under construction. And so, like, to, you know, the things you're saying about the storm, well, the bioswales weren't working right because the developer wasn't doing their job to protect them, you know. And, well, so we don't really know yet how they're going to function after that plat is finished and everything is greened over as it's supposed to be. And it's sort of the same concern when I think about the, you know, the crowding. And I drive, since it's on my way home, I drive through there frequently to look at the stage of construction. I'd actually say there's a lot of occupied homes. It surprises me.
That's true. They're definitely selling fast.
And I, you know, people are out in the parks. There's several, you know, parks in there. I've just been surprised at how fast the sell-through has been. But that said, of course, it is still, you know, one-third at least fully, you know, under home construction. And so there are vehicles everywhere. Last time I drove through, in fact, I picked up a fair amount of tar because it just finished paving the section, and I didn't see it before. Down. But so that's one of the things that I'm worried about is how quickly we, and I'm not opposed to making some modifications, just I'm hesitant to jump the gun before we really have the opportunity to feel that difference. And I think one of the other things, and when I was in CED committee and hearing, you know, kind of some of the concerns, it is a lot of a feel is what I was kind of hearing. It's the way it feels. And so that was what kind of drove me to asking Mike about these, you know, right-of-way standards and such, and what are the other neighborhoods look like. And so I pre-drove, and I drive a lot of these neighborhoods on a regular basis, and so I've got pretty good feel for the way they make me feel. And then I looked at the chart, and I had some real, wow, I wouldn't have thought it was that narrow or that wide. And and again, I go back, you know, like old Sideview, nothing at all like a roadway section like what we're talking about. And yet I'm looking at it's a 21-foot paved road section. I can't believe anything else comes close to being that narrow. And yet I never, ever have felt crowded driving down.
Very few people park on the street because they all have these huge driveways, which were really nice back then.
One other factor in Wood River is they actually have in their CCNRs a prohibition on parking.
Well, he's talking about old side view, which is, and that's really the biggest difference there is that big driveway. Yeah. So everybody parks on the driveway.
Yeah.
I mean, you would take a look at going, I mean, you've probably driven the new side view.
Yep.
And I'd say, you know, and I'm okay with that standards to some degree. But even when you've got a party and you've got two people on both sides, you know, it's crowded. Yeah.
One thing we did, if you recall, because refreshing my memory of the same, I've actually been through the street standards a couple times in different cities, including this one. And it's always about striking a balance. We know what fire needs. We know what slows traffic. We know this. And then finding that, we know what stormwater needs. And so finding that balance is key. And what we did do, because of that expressed concern of the driveways, is we do have a requirement that the garage is set back 20 feet from the sidewalk. So the house can be 15 feet, but the garage, so you, we know we're going to get at least a 20-foot driveway, so you don't get a lot of neighborhoods that don't have that on Snoqualmie Ridge will have like a 15-foot or 12-foot driveway even, and that's where you get that hanging over bumper issue. So we did amend that along with our kind of street standards to address that. So keep that in mind, because that's one thing that we got lucky. We had that.
If you could just add one thing. And I think you probably are aware of it, but I'm not sure the rest. At our CED meeting, what we were asking for out of CED actually differs a little bit from what the Public Works Department is looking at. We were just looking to add just a 7.5-foot travel lane, nothing else. Leave all the rest of the standards, leave the bioswales, leave it all alone. Because we think overall it's
seven and a half
works.
Parking.
Parking, sorry.
Not travel lane.
But that's it. And we thought the rest of it does work, and we didn't want to really start to tear the whole standard apart. It was a little more simplistic approach to it, but we thought that would address the concern. And so there's a slight difference. I know Frank and I, we may not see eye to eye on that, but there is a difference between the two recommendations.
Yeah. So what about traffic flow in one direction?
One-way roads?
One-way roads when we go to that narrow... I know it puts a little more restriction to the developer, but you still get the hot signs that they're trying to push for.
Typically, we get a lot of pushback with developers, number one, just because it, and homeowners in general, because there's a lot of wasted driving to get around the loop. So we haven't really gone that direction. We haven't gone that direction. Typically, a one-way road would require a 10-foot, 10-foot lane, 9 to 10-foot lane.
The only reason why I ask is Issaquah Plateau has that, and it's a lot narrower, even though I hate the narrowness personally, because it's just a traffic nightmare when you get multiple people on the road. But it does allow that to work out. I mean, I'm concerned about Cedars Falls when you get that built out and they have a fire emergency and they need to get a truck through there. They're going to have to wait for sheriff or now the new police department to get in there.
Just build a wide enough sidewalk.
what you're talking about too is a city's due diligence to actually enforce the parking code too. You know, so if we had parking on both sides, you know, the city would have to enforce where they're not, you know, because you get a lot of people parking by hydrants and all kinds of things. That
well, they have the parking where they want.
One of the questions I had, and I don't know if it's answerable, you know, with facts or not, is the bulb outs, which I like the bulb outs at the corners. I had not thought of the mid, and I was a little curious why we really did.
Dennis said that was your idea.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah, Rob wanted to.
We call him Roberts.
But yeah, right. But as I drove through and thinking particularly about the parking, I thought the sense that I get is almost like the bulb out is telling me that that's a parking lane, right? And so I'm thinking... It almost gives you this feeling that the travel lane is actually this one section between the bulb outs, and that both sides, therefore, are set up for parking. So I could see some of the confusion, and so the idea that being put forth here, the number two point about taking out the inner block bulb outs, that one kind of made sense to me. That and the other thought I had is, and we know that people see what they choose to see, so. You know, the amount of no parking signs and the amount of enforcement, but is one potential is in addition to the bulb outs is hey, you throw the yellow line down on that curb, it's pretty hard to tell the officer, gee, I didn't know that.
It you know, the only comment I would make to that, I'd be concerned, is we're limited in our resources. And if our resources, specifically our police, are working on traffic detail, they're not doing what we really need them. So as we start to look at, you know, designing things, that's some of the things that we need to take into consideration, because the cost of that is huge, and it'll come back to everybody at some point. And that's why I think, you know, if you can allow park on both sides, which naturally most people in a residential area are going to do, mm-hmm. you know. And most people, when there's a party, they're, you know, and there's right near their house, I don't care whether you put a yellow or red, they're still going to park there. So you're then going to pay, you know, limited resources to go enforce
it. Are we designing for the occasional or for the everyday?
Well, I'd hope we're designing for the everyday, and what we're, why we're recommending the 7.5 and doing the other. I mean, I know there's a concern that by doing this, we're cutting down the usable, buildable, you know, area, which was a real important one of the reasons why I think Jonathan and I looked at that and said, you know, this makes sense to do it smaller. But when we saw it in practicality and started looking at it, it was way too radical to go that way. So, you know, our hope is that we can find a compromise that works for everybody. Doesn't take a large amount, you know, of the developer's buildable space, which is important and at a premium.
So your sense is that it's really about parking and having a true second parking lane versus the width question, you know, and versus, say, the width of lots, the depth of lots, the parking on lot.
Well, I think with that extra one, if you look at it, most days on a regular basis, you're probably only going to have one on one side. So now you've got that extra room to travel. For those occasional times where you do have a party, but you know, at least you've got a compromise, because most times you're probably going to have just one there. I mean, I know if you live in Newside, most of the time there's one. It's not two on both sides. So it's big enough for the emergency vehicles to get through. Right now, my concern is even with the one, you don't have enough room. You don't have any
room for error.
Yeah, exactly. Right. At least with the 7.5, we're given some room for error.
One thing we're trying to do on our side is uniformity and have the same thing in different areas. And you know, we've got the enforcement issue, which is costly, but it's also on the street maintenance side. The striping takes time, takes money, takes air. And one thing I've noticed since I've been in North Bend is we use yellow paint and we set out different mixed messages with it. In front of City Hall, we've got a yellow stripe. It's not no parking. It's while you're in City Hall. Well,
yeah.
We've got inconsistencies, and we're starting to work on trying to inventory that.
I always thought it was just so that nobody would actually go into
City Hall. That's only for conversation. But we're trying to get... You know,
I never realized you parked there until Jonathan did. He said, no, it's fine. Oh, okay. You lazy SOB can't walk.
No, I followed his.
So everybody knows what they can do in different places.
Sorry, it's just, you know...
We can work a little harder on that end of it.
Yeah.
It's tough for the sheriff to go out and write a ticket for parking in the yellow zone when it may or may not be a problem.
It is, so the current paved section is indeed 25 and a half, right? 99 and 7 and a half?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
25 and a half, yeah.
So, okay.
So I was just, I don't know if I do my math right, but if Cedar Falls is 55 inches wide and the lot size is 6,500 feet, does that mean the depth of the lot is 118 feet, roughly? Would that sound about right?
In my head.
What do you, typically they're 100 feet.
I charge
Wait, you know, well, I think we all worked all day.
If it's 118 feet deep and you're going to take either 7.5 feet or 10 feet additional, it's going to come off the depth of the lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to come off that square footage of the lot. And so what is the impact to the development or to the people who live there and want to have a playset in back and now they can't?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. That's definitely one of the things on my mind is that exactly that is because the lot width is going to want to stay the same. That's what the builder is targeting, right? So it has to come out of depth or
lot, number of lots.
Or total loss of lots, right?
Or green space.
Or,
yeah. See, and what we're circling back to, again, is this order of priority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, as you guys are talking, I'm actually seeing quad maps and dots. Okay, this cluster
that's
looks
impressive.
Great. I'm just trying to conceptualize the argument. We're coming back to this list of priorities, so I don't know what our next steps are with this tonight, other than this is information. There's a lot of things for us to consider, and there's probably stuff that isn't even top of mind or presented here that we should add into this mix. So if we're looking at next steps, I'd like to, at some point, maybe discuss or create a list or something so we can actually conceptualize what it is we want to do before we put forth any
procedurally, from here, we go to...
You go to a public hearing, and I think... What would be nice, because we kind of have a situation where you got Public Works proposing one thing, and you kind of have your CED committee, council committee, suggesting adding the two lanes, the one parking lane, correction, is to be able to go to a public hearing. It'd be nice to have to come with one plan, I guess, for that. So is there a sense of the, I mean, you guys might, I guess I'm hesitating because you might not be there, but
And I get what you're saying about trying to prioritize it, and to Jenna's point, and I'm definitely in exploration mode right now, but I do want to arrive with a proposal. Would be nice to go into the public hearing, but that somewhat depends on what you hear in the public hearing as well.
Exactly.
So I guess another question I have is, has this been bounced off of our developers?
Correct? No, that would be the stage where I think most...
I can sure the ones
I know. What I can tell you what the answer is going to be. The answer is, you crazy? We got you to get it lower. But, and Jonathan, I understand that's going to be their reaction.
Yeah.
But you got to do what's right for the community and those people that are going to be living there long term versus,
right,
you know, the extra couple dollars. And I don't think it's trivial, and I'm not trying to make it trivial. But,
yeah,
you know, like we all have looked at, and we've looked at the latest survey, number one for our community is public safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this ultimately works into that.
Yeah.
One suggestion might be to bring back... basically bring back kind of the information you have. The committee's reviewed this, has an interest in adding a parking lane.
Mm-hmm.
Public Works has weighed in. Their ideal road would be 2 10-foot lanes and 2 8-foot parking lanes. And let the public hearing discuss the merits of those two concepts, and then you'll flesh out a lot of that from the developers if they show up on whether 10 is...
excessive.
They will show.
That's where I'm suggesting that there maybe needs a little bit more rigor here, because before presenting anything to a group of people, I'd like to have this checklist. You know, like, we've considered this, we've done that, and here's where we're leaning here for public safety.
Another technical question is. My presumption is that the overall length and construction of the bioswales is fairly carefully matched to the impervious surface it's collecting.
It's a balance with the impervious surface and the underlying soils and how everything, it's a give and take, trial and error,
mm-hmm,
kind of size those. There's minimums, obviously, but
right,
there's also going to be, some of those are going to get much wider.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, in North Bend, we don't have to go down too far, but it can be 10 to 12 feet before you start getting into the sandy, cobbly soils. You've also got the high water table that you've got to balance into those equations too. So it gets kind of technical in balancing out. It's easy to come up with the impervious surface.
Right.
You know, we've had the discussion about permeable concrete and permeable pavement, and I think the jury's still out on that, but I'm not hearing positive reports, because those permeable type are very high maintenance,
right,
and we, you know, You get a vacuum cleaner. These guys are having a heart attack with what I'm asking for now if I ask for a string vacuum cleaner.
That, the material and the technology is advancing, so any sort of material that was used a couple years ago was clogged, and they're totally different than what is now.
Well, I guess where my head was going is that, yeah, we don't, so in the standard, we've got this minimum width and minimum slope and minimum bottom, and it says, or maybe larger. I'm wondering what your estimated larger is when you add another 20-25% paved surface.
Did we ever get a chance to
I ran through some quick calculations. What the roadway section we're proposing, we're looking at 2 foot bottom width, 2 foot deep, 3-to-1 slopes, so it's about 14 feet wide.
Mm-hmm. So, and where are we now?
We're at about 11.
Okay.
We've added.
Calls for 11, didn't it? Or did it not?
No, we've added the.
You added that money.
Yeah, just, yeah. One thing to keep in mind too is I think what will happen is you'll end up getting a biochannel pond combo. So what's going to happen is.
That's definitely what's going through my head is wondering at what point do we go tippy?
Yeah.
And we're right back to pipe and pond.
Which is fine because even on the, you know, if you recall, we adopted that low impact demonstration plat.
Right.
They don't have the soils for low impact. They just aren't, they're on that bedrock up there by Rock Creek Ridge. And so they do have to use a pond scenario. Mm-hmm. And that might be, and that's okay too. I mean, they'll find creative ways to.
And if you're using bioswales, it means you have less overall infiltration pond you need to do.
Right.
The one thing that I'm recommending if we go forward with this is starting to look at, even on these LID, that we look at overflows and emergency type overflows. So if and when they don't work, it doesn't just load up and go on to the next door neighbor's property. It's got a defined way that it's going to follow the natural historic range.
So it's not that it's a question of whether we expand, but it's a question of how much. And I'm just wondering, from a lot of ways, what does that mean to a typical development? And so if we were to look at a case study of one development that said if you added 7.5 feet or if you added, I don't know, 8 feet, you know, parking widths, or you added 10 feet lanes, I don't know if there's some kind of easy algorithm, but if that's something that we could develop to just say you would lose overall 12,000 square feet or you would lose 24,000 square feet for every, you know, 5 feet of width or something, or, you know, is there some formula that we can get to so we could say, yes, we can get the maximum with the least impact to the overall development?
And I think Cedar Falls would be the perfect place to apply.
And that would be a question to the engineers.
We could do it, just take some time.
I mean, sure, Travis.
Let's see on a public standpoint, because we know this is an excellent informative packet from engineering. We know people are going to park on both sides of the street. We know people got big rigs, and they're also going to make a distance. So at any given time on any street, we should have considered that if there are two cars on both sides, then an emergency vehicle has to be able to comfortably drive through that space at any any street at any time. So on the overall width, that's really would prioritize it as a public citizen type of a.
Be sure and bring that thought back to the public here.
It's
geared to. I mean, I guess one again. So I'm thinking about. What's the impact to the width of the bioswale? At what point does it drive some other, you know, addition as a, you know, pond and pipe to go with it? How wide does then the right-of-way actually need to end up to be to accommodate whether we land on a 7.5 additional parking lane or we go to 9 and 8 or 10 and 8 and and then that drives the biochannel to be X deep, wider than it is now. And what's the impact on the lot, and how far does that push the homes away?
I'm also thinking there's a circumstantial element, right? We've talked about the school being a problem, that's a unique situation. Parties or events are another one. And when I'm thinking of Cedar Falls, I don't know what the demographics are there. I think they're younger family homes, so odds are will there be more cars in the household? Meaning, once people start having their kids and their teenage driving, are they moving on to a bigger estate?
They're going to go from bikes
to cars.
That's what happens. So, that's what's happening in our neighborhood right now.
Yeah, so exactly. It's matured.
And it started out, I mean, exactly what Cedar Falls was when I moved there. All kids. I mean, 2-3 year old. And now all of a sudden, these kids are driving, which is scary. Watch them grow up. And go, wait, now they're driving.
And not well.
Yeah. And they come flying around some of those corners. I mean, you know, they're kind of scary.
Teenagers do that.
Nah, they're good drivers.
We've already had a couple wipeouts.
Yeah. It takes me back to all the discussions and the start of Snoqualmie Ridge and trying to predict who was going to be the buyer and all the studies blew it by a long way, right? We planned for everybody moving in with their two little children already intact, and that was going to drive the growth of the school district. And instead, what we had was single or newly married people buying, you know, 5-bedroom, 35 to 5,000 square foot homes.
Planning a family
for somewhere into the future, and you just went, wow. Mm-hmm. But that was a huge delay. But eventually, they have kids and they grow up.
Right.
Damn.
Cycles through.
Right? So, I mean, my natural inclination is to go wider just for safety, community reasons, even beyond what's recommended here. But that's just where I'm leaning at this moment. If I had to make a decision right at the site.
That's one of the things I think, Jenna, you know, planning and engineering, we've gone back and forth, and I think everybody put their cards on the table. But the one thing that, as fast as this came through, when it just came down to just change and put one parking lane on, you know, what are the unintended consequences of doing just that one thing? And then start looking at the whole ripple effect, and it gets complicated.
Well, and I'm looking at it from... I'm comparing it to the most current neighborhoods that are under construction right now and functioning and fires accessing them. And I come back to the balance again. So, you know, you're going to have to strike a balance between driveway lengths, lot depths, parking width size, lane size, how much park space, where is it all coming from, and then does it pencil in the end for the developer. And so... you know, it's kind of...
I'd just be happy, which way you go, engineering or CEDs, just adding a parking lane. You go wider or narrow, it's fine. Just getting that extra parking lane makes it... you guys iron out the details and what works and what you think is appropriate.
So, in what's under development or on the table right now, Cedar Falls is history. Tannerwood's history.
Tannerwood's got the bigger one.
Yeah, Tannerwood has
Tannerwood's is one that they convinced us to go smaller, yeah.
Well, what
you're saying is what projects are already in the books.
The Tannerwood plat that's a done deal, right? We've got a plats in the middle called Byron Moore. We've got one called Harkin.
All of these are vested.
Everything on this list is vested.
The only one that's questioned.
About to be vested.
Or they're about to be vested. So Sigali is...
I mean, Byron Moore is pretty much vested. He's been in and out with different plans. So then
my next question is, that doesn't say that we don't have a lot more land to develop, because I was ready to actually a fair amount of space still with urban growth that this can apply to. But of the submitted preliminary plats were approved but unbuilt. Is it 100% of all submitted under LID?
Yep.
So all of those are going to happen regardless of what we do.
The one thing that we have the authority in the code to do is take out the mid-block bulb outs. Mm-hmm. But those were designed to ensure that, like, if you can envision one of the vulnerables coming out and ending on at the road, there's a bulb out on the other side, so nobody can park by that intersection. So the bulb outs actually, even though they guide you to park next to the bulb out, they actually restrict you from parking where we definitely knew there was going to be problems. So, but we have the authority through engineering to pull those out and only allow those at the corners.
Right.
So otherwise, they're vested.
Going in saying, "Oh, sorry, I changed my mind. I had another lane." Right. So we have quite a few plats and quite a few hundred lots that are going to be in this.
How many of these plats are falling in the Cedar Falls?
All of them except the Cannerwood. And we are consistently getting a lot of pre-applications for more. So they're coming. So the longer we...
Not to rush you, but...
Yeah.
Don't feel any pressure.
Piling up.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the staff if we could get two kind of assessments if we were to make changes. So today, I understand the width is 25.5 feet. That's with 2 9-foot lanes and 1 7.5-foot parking lane. I'd like to find out what would happen if the total width was 33 feet, which is 2 9-foot lanes with 2 7.5-foot parking areas, and another option of 36 feet wide, which is 2 10-foot wide lanes with 2 8-foot wide parking lots. I kind of give
three scenarios.
Two that we have today is 25.5. So one would be based along the CEDs, 33 feet, right, the 2 9-foot and 2 7.5-foot.
And what would you like to see in that analysis?
So what would be the total, square footage if you took Cedar Falls, for example? What would be the impact to that development? If we were to have either one of those as the options, would we lose, 24,000 square feet in total development of land, or?
Or any impact is also on the bio flow and all that.
Well, I was going to add to that is even more important than the potential lost, so to speak, land that available for a home site is. What's it adding in biochannel? What retention factor goes up as that square footage of pavement goes up? And I suppose it'd be pretty tough for you to say probably, but if you can, at what point does it go again tipsy into saying, oh well, we at this point you're going to have to add a pond?
If we had the CAD drawings in hand, it wouldn't be too difficult.
We have those.
CAD.
Don't we have those? They need to submit them. We can get them.
Yeah, we're going to need to.
It's part of the plat conditions for them to submit.
But it typically doesn't come in until we get to finalize built.
Okay.
We'll have to do some checking on that.
The other piece of data that I probably ask about is what does that mean financially for the construction of the swells or ponds for that increase?
We can do a swag on that.
What about long-term maintenance? You brought up a good point earlier. Certainly, the road formation can either have minimal long-term impact or whichever one. Because there's future costs are definitely. Jenna, one of the things that you brought up a minute ago about the bulb outs and being able to cut those out, those were put in for more of a strategic
mm-hmm.
traffic safety purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we sacrificing by cutting those out?
That's one thing we'll look at each plat by plat to ensure that we're maintaining safety.
Because
it was intended.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of logic behind it. So it was to avoid the fire concern that you guys have. So even though it's still a narrower road, obviously the 7.5 would
And what was your direction on the bowl bounds? Was it to lose them mid-block only?
Only
it
mid-block. Mid-block.
Keep them at the crosswalk.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's
sort of
the So, all right.
More questions for, I think, are more planning
okay.
than engineering. Is so I think you know, Gary's questions, which I think are great ones, and so that goes to your paved width, and that ends up having an impact with our the rest of our current standards on the overall right of way width. If our logic says that the you know bioswale is going to grow, so. If a goal would be to maintain the right-of-way width that best allows, again, for a minimum lot depth, which is favorable for the homeowner, should we be looking at sidewalk on curb on one side instead of forcing, you know, the planter strip in that saves 4 or 5 feet, right? And my thought was is if and of course I was thinking of it in terms of if it's on the parking side because that then the parked car gives you a safety feature, but or other you know are there other things that we can look at tweaking that help get that extra parking lane acknowledge the impact on the bioswale that we're hoping to keep as a best practice and yet not drive the overall width, the right-of-way width in such a way that impacts the...
That's certainly yeah. a possibility. I think one caution with that is if you're familiar with a dense neighborhood that doesn't have a planter strip is the pedestrians constantly going up and down over the curb cut and the driveway aprons.
That's one of the things I was thinking of. You know, when I look up and down our the list of neighborhoods here in Platts, and definitely I'm not interested in going back to you know just pavement, no curbs, no gutters, no you know anything. I'm not suggesting that at all. But we've got just about on this page, we've got just about every possible way to build a street section, and I think and in side view, I think a lot about you know the rolled curve over there that makes it so easy to drive right up onto the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's where you're getting your parking.
That's where it is.
Right,
that's how you get your full
right up onto the. I won't say it on the record, but I might have been known to do that. So.
Cut that out, please.
So, but you know, what is the best practice when you do sidewalk on curb, roll curb, has that impact? It's certainly a lot easier for the builder, I know, but gee, do you really want that, or do we want standard curb if you did that sidewalk on? Thanks to it. So,
the nice part about that roll up is you know when the kids are learning to drive, they're not taking out your sidewalls.
Right. Well, with the roll curb, you wouldn't be able to necessarily. It would be harder to do LID because what you do is you create the cuts through the curb to let the water through. So, the also thing to keep in mind is. You know, you're allowing the benefit of LID is they call it more point source recharge of the water. So the you're mimicking the way the water hits the ground naturally by keeping the water through the plat. You're also integrating open space through the plat. It's this in theory, it's the same amount of land that they would have to reserve as a pond, not a vault. Okay, so when you look at this analysis of how much land do they lose, and really it's going to be hard for engineering to analyze what you're asking for because you got to assume everybody's going to have the same soils, and that's not going to be the case. So what really I almost feel like you need to steer to is a look and feel that works with the allowance to take the site-specific issues in hand and engineer those properly, if that makes sense. Because it's really going to be hard because the next plat down the road, it could have clay.
Well, I appreciate your point, but going back to what Job said, it's about design is good design, about how it works, not how it looks and feels, right?
Good point. But how it's
Frank gets the quota.
Wow.
But
people who have iPhones that don't look good.
Oh. The other thing where I like where Gary was going is it helps me quantify.
Yeah.
Even if it's on the Cedar Falls, and for granted, not all plats, not all lots will be the same. It just helps me conceptualize the give and take of a certain paradigm.
No, and I think we should give you that information. I'm just letting you know that doing an analysis of that type, you know, we're going to have to analyze, okay, this is the soil that we analyze with. Yeah. I know, he's pretty amazing.
And then, you know, I'm wondering within that, let's say we do go with a wider area and there is a give and take that the developer has to make. Are there concessions that can be made with the amount of park square footage and stuff like that? Is that kind of where you
that's if that's a community decision. If you want to reduce parks, you can. That's.
Do you want to go on the record?
No, the point that I'm trying to make is that if there are other factors built in where concessions the developer can make a happy concession that will work for the community, then we should explore those options. And I just use that as an example.
Grab
that, I'll keep on the record.
You can grab the tape afterwards in a race about 20 minutes.
You know, when I was on planning, they were much nicer.
Well, you were here at the call of the hour, right?
That's what happened when you left. See, fell apart.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Well, that was Laufer as the planning commission chair, but I won't.
Scott ran a lot tighter show up here. I pretty much lost control this time. I've never had it.
Well, and speaking of Scott's, you know, our other Scott is a traffic engineer, so it would be interesting to get his take on it, too.
It's a shame. He was able to join the conversation at the CED because I was there. So I'm disappointed that I'm here to share with us tonight, too, because I thought he had some good thoughts and questions that he was asking then. So we'll look forward to that next conversation.
So just so these two leave with what I have is you want them to analyze the impact to the developable lot area or the developable area, which would include parks and based on the two scenarios.
That would require what the total lot size is or the total developmental size is,
mm-hmm.
so we know what the difference is.
Okay, and then the second one was analyze the change to the size of the and length and width of the biochannel. So how much more biochannel are we talking? And then a long-term fiscal impact, maintenance of the differences. And I had a fourth, but I didn't. I know it'll be on the minutes. But what was was there another one?
Well, I was asking about options. Such as curb on sidewalk and be creative because again. Difference between paved width and overall right-of-way width. How do we best balance that overall piece? Right. If that biochannel's growing, which is a nice green belt, do we really is having the full planter strip on the other side? Is that necessary in our best interest, aesthetically still desirable, still the right practice to do because it's safer for the pedestrian, whatever
concession
the thinking is, or what helps us with the overall right of it. Because at some point to me it just seems like it can get crazy wide.
I don't remember what the bulbouts look like, but could they be bioswales or something?
Some of them are. Yeah.
Rob, just off the top of my head, if we're concerned with losing lots and impacting the developer, maybe another way to look at it is going after like park impact fees and maybe assigning credits for bioswales or something towards park impact fees and allowing them to offset the loss of revenue or income from fewer lots by doing what we're talking about. But cutting their park impact fees.
You guys are all really creative people.
That's the kind of thing. So, I guess to be very clear, my first concern is certainly not with the impact to the developer and his ability to make a profit by having that extra of one or two lots, but my interest goes to the person who actually ends up in the home and their affordability factor, and my usual concern of, do we design ourselves into only an upper end community that can't support itself? So,
well, the economy is going to drive it that way too right now, with well, you know, interest rates going up.
Yes, to a degree, getting, but the difference of the Cedar Falls 6,000 square foot lot and the Tannerwood 75 plus lot and the differential and everything, you know, they're different price points, right? And so every one of those pieces, including what they invest in the roads, impacts that overall price.
Something we grapple with every day, because what we're looking at, how do we make affordable housing? I mean, even the cottage we're revisiting for that reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's my piece.
So for scheduling our next meeting on this topic, our next meeting would be I'm going to look at my calendar. Because what we need to do if we're going to have a public hearing is notice that. So we need the 10 days plus the
2 weeks notice?
Pretty much, because you got to get it to the paper. So, November, would November 14th already be, or do we have a full agenda in November?
No.
So we could we get it?
We get it to the paper this Friday.
So we could do it the 14th of November or the first meeting in December, because you're probably not going to have a Thanksgiving week.
Well, from my perspective, it's what's in the work sessions.
By November.
Not the information you're asking from us.
If we're not going to get that.
That's why I'm bringing it up as a team decision.
Unless we want to start dropping things off the plate, which.
It's your guys' call.
Like to drop the whole plate.
So we'll just wait to hear back from these guys on when they think they can.
Well, I think we need to press and say, hey, but December, we're going to really need to be there, right? Is there any reason you don't feel December you can get to that?
It would be the second Thursday of December, so it would be the 12th.
You know, these guys are breathing down our neck.
We're brutal.
Brutal.
In fact, they're making us work. No. We canceled, what, Thanksgiving?
It's a good thing.
We canceled
meetings right
now. Oh, we're here. Yeah, I know. It's because we got people like Jonathan that are slackers.
That's the one guy who is not a slacker.
Jonathan.
I know the other one.
Wait, he takes the summer off. What are you talking about?
He is the slacker.
She turned on me like that.
I'm just kidding.
Thanks for the help. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you guys for letting us attend tonight. I really do appreciate that.
Happy to be partnered in on the problem.
Yeah, thank you. Rob's been great going to our meetings at CED. It's been really helpful to us to have someone from planning there. It's been nice. I've enjoyed doing working that way. I think it's more effective means of getting things done.
So that you guys know, I take all of your input, I turn it into what I want.
Yeah, take all the credit for every great idea.
I got to tell you guys have the hardest job. This is the toughest position. Yeah. If I thought, you know.
Is that why you moved to council?
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's less
easier. It's so much easier.
It is. I have the utmost respect for you guys, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you guys again.
You're here.
Thank you. Anytime you invite us, we'll come.
You okay? As far as that notion, we can get to December, it sounds like.
Oh, I'm going to give it a shot. Okay. One thing we're going to have to do, if we can get the digital files, the AutoCAD files, not a PDF. But
right. Be huge. Yeah, I get that. Then, just for adjournment, my question to staff is, we are narrowing in on the end of the year. When are we going to be looking at next year's
work plan? Well, we've been talking, we've been kind of waiting to see a couple things unfold. We'll probably bring to you in December what we see is the first at least 3 month work plan, but we're also working to kind of finalize our work plan with what kind of the direction we're getting with the council. So we have kind of a list together already, and we see a few things getting added. But we'll have a list going for that meeting, and then maybe we could really put some focus on it the first meeting in January.
Okay. And is there anything on our current rolling agenda that we've not attended to?
You're talking about the dockets?
Yeah.
We had on the optional things for dockets signs and SEPA.
Either of those are not going to
be happening this year.
Okay.
Touch sign.
This year. Signs, yeah, we can kick that one out.
Yeah, we'll
be able to finish that one.
December next time to have that.
So, right, so that's the docket. And then are there anything other than this that's currently pending to come back to us?
Potentially. That's the two, the Torgerson rezone went and the CenturyLink went to council work study.
Right.
And they gave some direction where we're going to either, we'll have more information for you at next meeting, whether it's
the CenturyLink. Did we decide on that last year?
Kind of annexing?
No, I mean, we haven't seen anything.
Okay. All right. So there may be some. So but I guess the next place that I was going was, it sounds like, based on the conversation, that we're probably not having any meetings. We're not having the next two-week meeting.
Possibly not. We'll have to think about it.
I don't know. We have a couple of simple ones that we might bring forth, if just to keep things rolling. One was that landscape, potential landscape amendment. Only he was at the CED committee where there's a desire to have uses that have unsightly storage elements, like a car service repair shop that has exterior parking for cars that are being worked on.
That's right here, right?
Yeah, there's a number of them. We seem to be at the, I think it's because we're at the base of the pass, so we have a lot of towing. But right now, where there's kind of a situation in the code that might not be the best for us is a business license does not trigger the screening element of these uses. So if a car repair goes into an existing commercial space, done deal. They don't have to bring their use up to code. We're thinking there's a desire to change that, so a business license would trigger a minimal level of screening, so you won't have those unsightly features that it would be typical at any new development, and will uphold the general look and feel of the neighborhood. So that would be the one that I could see coming forth, and would be at least a good intro to get that one moving along.
Expedite that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't we talk about some commercial zoning and some impacts to the area next to hotels that we never finished?
Oh, the park across the street.
Across the street.
Yeah, well, that one went back to you guys for further consideration.
Right, and we have not. Yeah.
Council.
Did it get to us?
Yeah.
I don't remember that coming forward.
Yeah.
I think that one got kicked back because we need to analyze the impact of the turn lane. With the trail, but you know, from the comments that we got from the museum with the trail there, and really find out how much buildable area is on that lot before you guys were comfortable rezoning that
and
lot.
And then you recommended the Parks Commission also consider that, so they'll have to take a first step and then make their recommendation to you guys to consider that.
So right now, you guys we're pretty much through our work plan for this year. So great job.
No comp plan.
Oh, wait till next year.
Wait, I'm sorry.
We're going to rebuild this city next year.
We have a deadline to redo our comp plan by 2015, June 2015, I think it is. I'm hoping that date gets pushed. So far, every time they've hit a deadline.
Did you say June 2015?
Yeah, but that's...
Didn't we take 6 months just on flood?
Yeah, I know. It was you took a year. Not you. Transportation was a year.
Okay, what's your point?
I know.
Light just got much
so
worse.
You, instead of one meeting a month, it's now two meetings a month? Is that right?
No, it is two.
Yeah. Oh, it's two, is it? Okay.
It's two. We're just looking at November.
You don't meet every other day.
You know? Oh.
I'll anytime entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Here, Frank, you can. Okay. For a second.